We are back for the new year, 2026. Counterpoints returns. Pimp and I will be regaling you with our thoughts about CS, all the rest of it, as usual. Right, one thing I thought we would do is, I actually do, one thing I'll give you, I'll do my usual break the fourth wall and show people a bit of how I'm thinking about things. One thing I've always tried to do with my content is, because a lot of how I do content came from the fact that I was a fan of the scene and I'm a fan of good content, etc. It's why, if you notice, I don't tend to have sort of like much of a rivalry with other content creators, because if they're really good, I enjoy their content, mate. I actually want their content to be good so I can enjoy it as a fan. One thing I try to do as a result is I do try to keep my eye on what do other podcasts talk about. And while certainly I won't have my opinions and give my thoughts about topical things, I've noticed almost every podcast for about the last month, mate, has just been about all the obvious who's the number one player in 2025? Is Astralis the greatest team ever, or Vitality? And the problem is we've even done some of those topics to death. So I just want to let people know at the outset, we're not going to do the episode that every other show's done, which is just either end of 2025 stuff, or here are the most obvious roster moves that happened recently, like Simples. In fact, we even did a bit of that already. The idea BC game would get the Saw players and stuff. 100 things. We've already actually teased some of these before. So I feel like instead what we'll do is do what I call like classic analyst bait, which is when you've got big tournaments coming up, what you really want to know is these things, which is where's the head of the analyst at and where do you think the teams are at? And then let's sort of do, this is what everyone loves to do before the football season, let's do sort of like a preview of where we think people are going to be, who's on the rise, who's going to go down. So I'll tell you one area I want to start this discussion, Pimp, actually, because I think it's the spiciest place to begin, which is at the major. Unfortunately, I feel like half the storylines died the moment Na'Vi beat Furia in that quarterfinal. Because before that, if you think about it, right, the other side of the bracket was going to be mega no matter what. Like, if somehow Falcons had made it, it would be insane. If Spirit had made it, it would be epic for Donk. Obviously, Vitality already had the, like, default storyline of the best team of the year anyway. But for me, the other side of the bracket did get ruined. In fact, if anything, we're almost lucky that it was FaZe that came along and did all those miracle games, because at least FaZe has like a pre-existing fan base of doing all the FaZe bullshit, etc. But I say all that to say, I feel like, amazingly, it sort of mildly shut up the annoying Brazilian fanboys, mate. But unfortunately, it did that thing that I hate in CS, yeah, which is everyone pretends they got the Men in Black device out and bleeped themselves. And they're all, everyone's forgotten, Pimp, that 1 second before Na'Vi played that game, everyone in the world was saying, Fury is the number one team in the world, number one VRS team. They are the favourite for this major. This is the easy side of the bracket. They have just destroyed Na'Vi earlier in the tournament. They're going to win this tournament. They'll be the And so as a result, I actually feel like the Furia narratives are the ones that are the most almost lost at sea now, mate. People don't know where they should be at with them. So I feel like this is the obvious one we should talk about first, because I'll just set the table like this. If I think about how CS usually works and I think about how badly they did in that one match, remember the rest of the tournament, they were awesome, dude. They 3-0 the Swiss. Like, they looked dope against Na'Vi in that game in the group stage. Everything was great, basically, for months until that one match. And then that one match has sort of soured the narratives. It's made even their fans scared to be like, we're the number one team. Mate, if I'm Furia, anyone in Furia, the first thing I say when we lose that match, bro, in the locker room is like, look, this obviously does blow. Like, our main goal is to win the World Championship. We really had a real chance to do it here. But tell you what, mate, surely we're just going to be demons at these next tournaments. Like, don't we just come back? If anything, we should be super hyped to come and destroy this Blast Bounty tournament and then IEM Krakow. Like, this should be one of the most motivated teams, bro, to hit the gas pedal at the beginning of the season and win all the first tournaments. What do you think?
It should be, but I don't think it's going to be that easy.
Ooh,
to be completely
okay.
Honest,
why?
Because I think, like, I've seen it, I feel like I've seen it so many times before, where a team like Furia, they, let's be honest, they kind of came out of nowhere and they had a good period of 3 months. It wasn't like, yeah, they were good for six, seven, eight months. You know, they were decent and then it became the best team in the world. And then, as you said, like, the major kind of screwed with the narrative. And then obviously there's two ways to go about it. You know, is it going to be Furia getting back to where I personally would have had him, you know, coming into the second part of 25. I'd say, like, yeah, Furia is a top five team, you know. Occasionally, maybe they make a semi-final, go to a final, who knows. But they're not going to be a team winning three trophies. That was a big surprise. But, you know, if I were to make a guess, and if I were to odds right now, I'd say Furia revert back to being a good team. But they're not going to be a team that is going to dominate the team.
You don't think they're going to be a contender?
Won three tournaments in a row. They will, oh, fuck, will they win a trophy? They probably will win a trophy, but I'm not sure it's going to be one of the big ones. I'm not sure it's going to be the Cologne, okay, or the Krakow, or one of the more prestigious events. I think they'll win perhaps, you know, a trophy or two. But I think, to be completely honest, That's why it was so tough for me to buy into Furia winning a major as well, because I feel like when someone is having like a, it's not a honeymoon period, but it's just a period where everything is working out. It's a period where everyone is clicking, everyone is performing at their best. You have Yuri playing like he was playing 4 years ago. You have Keserato being on the top of his game. All of a sudden, Yekindas comes out of his slump after being 4 years in a slump. You have Fallen, you know, being a rifling in-game leader. Again, let's be honest, zoom out. Nobody thought he was going to be as productive as he was. I feel like at some point, it just takes one of those pieces to fall apart before the rest of it kind of falls down to a level where we thought they were going to be at. At least that's, you know, what the logical sense is going to tell me. So I do feel to some degree that if I were to make a guess right here, I'd say Furia is still going to be a good team. They're still going to be a team that we talk about, you know, when we talk about one of the favorites coming in and maybe winning tournaments. But I'm always willing to bet that it's going to be... Fuck, do I want to say this? I'm always willing to bet that I don't think Furia is going to be a top three team the first 6 months of 2026. I think there's other teams out there who can overtake them. I think Spirit is obviously with the roster changes and with Donk, you know, coming in with very, you know, a lot of hunger to show different things. I think Vitality to me is like, that's everything Furia wants to be. Like that staple core, that staple team that has the star power on Saibu, that has the rubs, that has the foundation to play a shit tournament and still get into the final. I feel like Furia doesn't have that, you know. Still interesting objects to the team. Molodoy, I think he's going to continue to develop, but I'm having a tough time seeing Yuri play as well as he did in those 3 months. I'm having a tough time seeing Yekinda continue to have the same amount of impact that he had in those 3 months. And I'm having a tough time believing that Fallen gets any better. You know, I think Fallen has had a time now where he's been overachieving and he's been doing so fantastically well. But I would even say that if Furia were a top three, top four team the first 6 months of 2026, that should be good enough for them, right? They're not a team that I, on paper, would say they should be winning a lot of trophies. Now, we know they can because they just did it just a couple of months ago. But realistically speaking, player material, what I know, what I see from the other teams, you see teams changing rosters, you see teams coming in with new motivation. I wouldn't be surprised if Furia is not going to be a dominant force that a lot of people still think they will be.
Ooh, by the way, I will say it on LFN. It's not me or any of the people on the shows who doesn't, but the editors and the people who actually put the videos out do clickbait the fuck out the titles, bro. So I can tell you, this one, they don't even need to pimp. You just gave it to them right there. Like, pimp, they won't even win a tournament in like 6 months or whatever. Like, there you go. That's a banger right there. That doesn't even need clickbait, editor. Just put that as the title, mate. Because I will say, though, I'm actually going to disagree with you on this one. Here's why. Look, in some areas, as usual, I think everyone who I think is a good analyst... One of the things I love about analysis is it isn't really about like whether you're like right in terms of the result, because the result's variable. It's more like, is your reasoning logical? And by the way, it doesn't even have to mean I agree with the reasoning. It just has to mean it's coherent to how you reason things. Like, it's why when I do shows with Maui, I can sometimes guess what his take will be, which doesn't mean I agree or disagree. It just means I can see where he's going with it. So as usual, you've made a lot of points I do agree with. Like, for example, one reason why I don't think Furia will be, for example, as they were before the major, the number one team, like ranked number one. By the way, one thing about that was slightly fugazi, it's just we're not supposed to say it out loud because people get their feelings hurt, is two of the tournaments they won were smaller tournaments that Vitality didn't attend, for fuck's sake. Like, so spoiler, if Vitality had attended those tournaments, Vitality would probably still be number one, even just by getting top four at every event, you know, like that alone would make the rankings that. So first of all, it's not that you were a fake number one, you were number one based on the rankings of the system, but you were number one with like a little bit of help. You weren't like, it wasn't like you were actually like dominating the whole scene. Then also, I do think when you watch the way they won those tournaments, people hate when I say this, but just go back and watch them, mate. I always think of that Mongols one, one of the first ones they won. Bro, there were some really close. Even some of the 3-0s, like the 3-0 the end against Vitality, was really close. Again, even though on paper, Liquipedia would say they won four events or whatever, they weren't winning them like... Giga slapping everyone, 13-7. It's why the joke is, Pimp. That's why actually me and you even had Falcons potentially as a bigger winner for the major. Because when Falcons do lock in, they look really scary. When Furia locks in, they sort of beat you in the clutch and they beat you with like big players from people. But if you were the opponent, you'd always leave the match going, oh, we could have got him. Fuck, you could have got them though. Whereas I feel like when like Falcons beats you with all three of those star players, you're just like, fuck. It's like the Man City thing. It's like they got more money, mate. What am I supposed to do? They've got better players than we do. Like, feels unfair. Like, they should beat me. So on that level, I'm with you. Like, pretty soon, I don't think they will be the team of the season. I think any fan imagining that was a bit delusional. I actually do think also that your window to strike was right there at the major. I think that was a fucking really good chance to out of nowhere sort of nick there. Especially because, by the way, despite what everyone says, Vitality was going to be the team of the year anyway. Like, if anything, they don't have like the pure hunger to win the major in the same way. They just won the last one before, boys. So like, I actually feel like that was your best chance to win a major. But with that said, if I look at the circuit, I do still think they win a trophy though. Because the thing is, to me, they're they're still like a top four team, top three team, depends on obviously how, like you say, the roster moves with Spirit, the obvious ones I'm looking at, that can change everything in the dynamic. But when I look at them, it looks to me like Mouse might even like destroy their own team and be worse, let's see, on that one. So there might be some chances to still be like a top three team without being as good. But here's why I do, where I agree with you is this. First of all, I definitely agree on that Yekinda and the Jurij point. Those two had numbers that don't look plausible to maintain, mate. Jurij especially. It's like, if he can really keep doing that, mate, then forget the idea of like, will they win trophy? They'll be like one of the greatest teams to ever play Counter-Strike, mate. If that's going to be your fourth best player, like, I mean, we've already seen what Messi's done in Vitality from that position. Like, that makes you OP as fuck if your fourth player does shit like that. So I'm sorry, I just have to see that. That felt to me more like he hit a nice streak. Also, I'd imagine he's one of the people that hasn't been... If I'm looking at a demo, mate, to shut people down in Fury, he's at the back of my list, isn't he? I've got fucking Keserato and Yekindar and Mulder. That's if I ever get to anyone else, I'm getting to those people first. And then also, I definitely agree on the Yekindar one. When Yekindar first joined this team and they got a bit of success, I remember saying to people, it's actually not about whether he's going to like top frag. That's actually, I don't even expect that from him. It's more like, can he just do that opening style? Because like, when I look at their squad, this is actually a positive. One of the reasons I think this squad can, in theory, with this core, always be good, is I do think it is OP as fuck when you have this combo, which is that you have the really aggressive entry rifler and then the really good passive lurk rifler, because there's no overlap in those positions. It's why when, in this team, it looks awesome. Like, the whole point is that Yekindar's effect essentially makes Keserato's life easier. It just makes your best player already have an easier time farming kills and attacking the round. The Molodoy one's the one I'm a bit more up in the air about, because what people forget is, in the same sense as I give him a little bit of a break for the Major, it's like, look, you are a rookie. You've only just got to the top level. At the same time, though, rookies don't always just go like a straight line up. Sometimes they have a dip back down again. You never know. Like, the problem Molodoy has in this sense is he isn't Monacy. Like, I've seen Monacy do this for like 3 straight years, guys. Like, if Monacy has a month that's bad, I'll go to Okay or Zimu. They're going to come back. I know that. Like, it's like the sun rising again, mate. I don't worry that it went down at night. I know it's coming back the next day. If you're someone who's only done it for like 6 months, I have no fucking clue what you're going to do the next 6 months, mate. Maybe the next 6 months is your difficult sophomore season, as people say, where you have a harder time. And like, by the way, he is the player, unlike Jurij, that I tell you what, if I'm any other coach in the world and we're playing Furia, that's the number one player I'm studying the demo of, mate. That's the number one person we're all trying to shut down and fuck with and send all our fucking like triple peak you when you're on a nuke outside or something. You know, that's exactly the guy. It's going to be even harder. So the good news is this: if he actually is going to be a Monacy level player, this is what will force him to do it, mate. He'll have to level his fucking game up and become for real one of the top 3-4 players in the world. And then lastly, I'll just put that out there as well. I'll tell you a weird angle on Molodoy people won't have thought of. I just did an episode of a show I do with Ted and King T called, I can't remember if it's Outcomped or Overcomped. I think it's Overcomped. I'm not sure. It's one of those two. It's on King T's channel. And one point he made, and it's actually quite a clever thing, was he did one of those things where you take two players where you can't see who they are. They're like a cutout of the player. And he shows you two sets of stats, and it's the classic one of which one should have the higher rating on HLTV. And the trick was, it was actually rating 2.0 from CSGO and it was rating 3.0 from CS2. And they were the same players. That was the genius of what he did. So what he showed was that, like, if you took people like Shiro and Monacy, they could have identical stats, because they basically do, by the way, to when they're at the end of CSGO. And the best one was Shiro, bro. Because someone like Shiro's rating for HLTV is way lower, but he has almost identical stats, because essentially rating 3.0 doesn't benefit like passive AWPers as much. Well, what this actually showed for people like Monacy and Zimu as well, by the way, is the real reason why Molodoy's numbers on HLTV rating are so much lower than Monacy and Zimu is because he's basically trying to be like a pure AWPer, bro. Monacy and Zimu are really good with the rifles too. And so what they do is they farm with the rifles and then they also AWP, and that's where their overall HLTV, that's where no one else who's an AWPer can match them. Because focus like Torsi are just on the AWP all day long, mate, and Torsi's just a mid-ass rifler. He's like a normal player. The point is, Zimu and Monacy could just be world-class players with rifles. It turns out that the rating does benefit rifling a little bit more. So my point here is Molodoy has to do more than just shoot people with the AWP and have, if he wants to have those crazy ratings and win all these MVPs. So I do think there's a lot of question marks. With that said, though, look, we're not actually disagreeing on that much. Like, maybe for you, they're making semis and finals. I think they'll nick an event or two here or there. Like I said, for me, they'll be third or fourth. I think that's fair.
Yeah,
don't think I'm here.
I think my counterpoint to myself would be that I think they're going to be more successful the first 3 months than the following three months. You know, leading up to Cologne, leading up to the first major, I think that's where they're going to struggle mostly. Because I think another theme that we could probably dive into as well is the fact that I think Apex said it during the HLTV award show, you know, that a lot of teams want to make change, but they can't right now. Financial situation.
Yes.
You know, players are very expensive, infiltrated, you name it. I think there's a lot of teams, you know, right now who perhaps wanted to make changes, who are trying to ride out the first couple of tournaments, you know, trying to ride out the first couple of months, 1, 2, 3, 4 months, see if it works out. And when they realize, oh, we shouldn't have done that, we actually should have splashed the cash when we had the chance during the player break, they're going to do that mid-season to make sure they don't waste Cologne as an opportunity. Because I think everyone had their eyes set on Cologne, you know, being, obviously it's a major, but that's the major you want to win. That's the big one, you know, having a major in Cologne with the history of the tournament, et cetera, et cetera. That's what teams, organizations are willing to splash a little extra cash, a little extra, I guess, risk at that point. So I feel like Furia, they're coming into the beginning of the season here being one of the most stable teams. You could even make the case that if you're looking at FaZe, you know, I think there's a world where if FaZe has unlimited budget, they probably would have changed something within that team, and we can get into who that would have been. I'd you say the same for Mouse? We don't know realistically whether or not that's going to happen, you know, but I think Mouse would have done the same. I think there's a lot of teams who realistically wanted to change a couple of pieces within their lineups, whether that be one player or two players, but they didn't do it, you know, in the beginning of the season. But that doesn't mean they can't do it 2 months, 3 months into the circuit. And I think that's where the competition is going to be steeper for Furia, because obviously they're going to come out having the playbook, having the confidence still. It was just one best of three versus Navi during the major that kind of fucked up the narrative. So I agree. It's not that I don't see Furia being a contender. It's not that I don't see them, you know, being close to winning trophies. I would just still say that right now I have Vitality high on the pecking order. I still think Falcons keeping the lineup, you know, potentially maybe changing one piece as well with Tessus down the line, if that's not going to work out, could be a contender for trophies. So they're definitely in conversation, but I do feel that the more we see some of these bigger teams like Spirit, like Falcons, maybe depending on what G2 is willing to do as well with that lineup, like some of these teams that is right now not in the conversation of Furia, but I think they're going to ramp up. I think they're going to get a better, you know, from maybe March leading up to June, leading up to July for the Cologne Major. So I do feel if Furia wants to find any sort of success that's going to have us, you know, talk about them being a top three team for the first 6 months, then they have to find it early on in the season. Because my worry is that the competition is only going to get steeper. And my worry is that for the other teams right now, there's nothing worse than being on a team where you wanted to replace a player, but you couldn't because of financial reason, because of contractual reasons, because of whatever, because it just makes you feel that you're only playing at 95%. Like, you're not going the extra mile. You're not playing an extra hour of deathmatch. You're not, you know, going through strats the same way you would if you had a team where you fully believed in it. The best example is Vitality with Sphinx, you know, the later part of 2024, where they played half a year with Sphinx on the lineup, knowing that they were going to replace him, send him to Mouse and get in Rops. Yeah. It was still a very competitive Vitality, but you could feel they're only playing at 80, 85%. You could feel that they would take more breaks, more time off practice, wouldn't really come in as prepared for the tournaments because no one in the team fully believed in it. There's a case to be made that we have two or three teams, you know, heading into this season having that same feeling. And, you know, we see it in football all the time. We like to make the analogy. Sometimes you have football coaches, you know, and there's conspiracy theories, and there's certain journalists who are suggesting that a football coach is not changing in players, you know, in the 80th minute or in the 19th minute in order to send a message to the board that I'm not going to change any players, I'm not going to substitute anyone because the ones I got on the bench, they're not good enough, they're shit, give me some better players. I feel like the same could be to some degree applied to Counter-Strike, where a guy like Apex, you know, he's going to make a case with Sphinx back in the day to make sure that we're not going to win the next four tournaments, because if we do, there's no way I'm allowed to change Sphinx, even though that's what everyone wants to, right? So it's this, no one is losing on purpose, but sometimes you are sort of between the lines making a statement by saying we're not going to practice as much because we don't have the player, we don't have the team that we want to. Give us the player I want, give me the team I want, and I'm going to give it 100%. Until I get that, I'm only going to give 90 or 95%. And obviously it's a bit ridiculous to say, but we see it in professional sports all the time, that they're trying to hint and send certain messages. It's not like players are not trying to win 100% of the time whenever they're playing, but at times you can, you know, give it your 100% at all times if you don't feel you have the lineup to work with. I think Kerrigan in FaZe is another great example of that if he had all the pieces he wanted to, he would give it 140%. And he's arguably the most hardworking guy I've ever come across in Counter-Strike. But when he's not working with the four pieces that he believes can be the best team in the world, maybe he's only giving 95%, which is still a lot for Kerrigan, which is still more than a lot of other people, but it's still not 120, which he would give with other pieces. So I do think that, you know, just to circle it back to Furia, there will be teams right now who are not willing to work as hard or be as focused in the beginning of the season as they would heading into Cologne, where they probably figured out that, okay, this team is going to work out, or we're going to change a player, you know, in March because it didn't work out as we said during the player break. So please spend the cash now.
No, I definitely agree. Like, if you look at the top 10, that's actually another factor, if you're a Fury, also helps, is that actually if these other teams, essentially, if everyone had done what we all thought would be the case, this is why VRS has changed everything, because people keep those cores, it's made the value so much more expensive, and people also aren't just going to give you their fucking cores, and then they can't play the tournaments. Like, they have to sort of, it's almost like they have to line up their replacement before you can get the player from them. So I think the problem now is people thought, especially after season one last year where Vitality won everything, everyone thought, oh, all that'll happen every offseason is every top team will just gamble on any player change to beat Vitality, which is a great idea. But you notice it hasn't really happened, bro. We've gone through two roster cycles now where you've had one or two teams, mainly the ones who really were desperate, make the move, you know, the Narvis of the world where they're slipping out of relevance. It's actually only Spirit of all the big teams that's tried these super aggressive moves, I'd say. In fact, it's even why I think Spirit's more move than they keep you on the bench and they can still bring you back. It's kind of a cool idea. It means it's not the end of the world. They almost have like the Windows undo feature. If they don't like that they fucked up the move, they don't have to do that. Should we have kept the player? No. So if you look at it, I had a similar list to you. I was putting down names where if you make player moves, these would be dangerous squads. In theory, none of these four names will make moves. FaZe, I'm almost certain, won't. By the way, I'm with you. I think it's actually obvious they just don't have any money, mate. Like, if you look at the decisions made in that team, I've always said this, the way that they laughed and brushed off losing in the final while they were still active in the Grand Final of the Major, forget normal teams even, no Kerrigan team would ever do that if you actually thought your team could win the match. Like, that to me was like, you even knew it was a joke that you were in the final. You were almost just like, let's just fucking try our best points, but this is impossible. Like, to me, I think you'd be way more bombed if you really believed your team was a contender. So to me, I don't think they actually, if you could put a truth serum into them, I think they'd all admit, even Jacob would admit, yeah, this team shouldn't win the major. Like, of course not. But they clearly aren't going to make any roster moves, it looks like. Na'Vi, I actually think they've just got the classic curse of, you looked so good at the major, you don't make a move because you want to see if you can continue and build on it. I don't blame you for that one, but I think it's a classic error that you're going to make. Mongols just have the thing where it's like, for whatever reason, we're never going to get it. I've just accepted now, Pimp. Sadly, because now I'm not an insider into Mongolian Counter-Strike, I'm never going to get to know the reason why. I'll probably have to wait 1 year until Senzu or someone the Mongols does an interview and it's safe and they just tell us what really happened there, because sadly now that apparently Senzu's coming back but not for Mongols and it's not even Controllers who stays, I have to just assume that that team doesn't get any better. Like, if anything, they might even be worse. Like, so there's already three teams, and then I'm with you on the G2 one. I also think G2's is very simple. One, they did spend a lot of money last year, and then two, they almost have a mini Na'Vi one of like, hey, we're still working with this roster, give us time, you know. So I also think psychologically they're not in the mood to make a change. I do think if you saw a lot of how they messaged in their interviews, their whole shit was sort of like, give us more time, or, you know, we had some unlucky breaks. So that, but the point is, those are on paper three big orgs, and then one team that at one point last year was one of the best teams in the world in Mongols. Like, those are all teams that should be, you know, elbowing people out the way to get in those top five spots, but it doesn't look like they're going to. And so I'll tell you what, we'll pivot to one of those in a second. But one last thing as well to throw in for Furia is, I will give you one last detail, which is one area I am down on Furia is this. Bro, they are one of the teams that will be hit the most by that train removal and Anubis coming in. Like, they were, it's yes, actually why them getting wrecked by Na'Vi on that third map still blows my mind to this day, Pimp. Because I'll tell you, I did a live view of that match, and even I thought after Inferno, Na'Vi's probably fucked it, mate. That was your chance right there. You had to win 2-0, because on train, they were, except for that match, they were a really fucking good team, mate. Like, that was a map I was quite worried about. Whereas Anubis, like, they were nothing on this map, mate. Like, this wasn't a team that was a team that you had to worry about with Anubis. So I have to say, that's an obvious angle where they'll be worse. But I'll tell you what, Pimp, the one area about the Anubis edition that in theory isn't negative, as I'll tell you what, mate, there was a team at the end of last year that I was completely done on. It's like, I've seen it all. Motherfucking Aurora! If I was Aurora, mate, When I hear that news that Anubis is coming back, I'd be setting off fucking fireworks, you know, fucking hugging each other. And if I'm fucking Jota, it's like, mate, maybe you can stay. You know what I mean? Like, at this point, that team, I'm not even trolling. It seems like a meme, but like, that should instantly make this team more dangerous. They should actually have a chance to, again, fuck around and win a tournament, maybe, right?
Yeah. I agree. That's definitely, like, I think the map pool change is something that definitely plays into both a disadvantage for Furia, but also obviously a massive advantage to Aurora. I'd even say Spirit as well. You could put Spirit in that conversation, sure, as well. And that's the funny thing about the notion that they are very legitimate. But the funny thing about Spirit is that we started last season, you know, at this very tournament, the Bounty, with, I think it was Donk saying he hates to play Anubis, like he doesn't like to play the map. But just because he personally doesn't like it doesn't mean that Spirit weren't fantastic.
They were good
on the map.
Like,
they had one of
definitely
the best win work. Very good. You know, it was only Aurora at the time that you'd argue were better, you know, in terms of like punching above their weight or winning more of the games that they weren't supposed to win against, depending on the quality of opposition. Spirit was super, super stable on Anubis. And even that tournament where Donk said, we don't want to play it, or I don't want to play it, I hate the map, it's shit, whatever. They ended up in the grand final picking the map or something like that, or in the semifinal. They ended up picking the map themselves, right? So it was kind of like a smoke blur. So I even think for Spirit that that's another one where they're going to benefit from that map pool change. I just want to put a final notion on the Furia thing, right? And maybe, you know, divert the conversation to Spirit or something like that. But that's probably my ballsy pick or my hot take, is that I would say that if, when you look at the first 6 months of 2026, if I were to guess, and it is guesswork, it's just a hunch. Obviously, I don't know what's going to happen, so please don't be mad at me for saying this. But I think Vitality are going to have more success than Furia. I think that's fair to say, and I think that's realistic. I think Falcons are going to have more success than Furia in terms of finally getting to win things. I can't see another 6 months of them not winning, because two things will happen. Either they start winning from the get-go, like they win one of the first three tournaments they play, or they will make the banger roster change. That is obviously getting rid of Tezzes in a role that he's not fit to play. Tezzes is too good to be wasted in that role, and he's not contributing enough. And if you could get Jim Fatt, or if you get Bit or someone, you know, just another superstar in that role, then I firmly believe that Falcons will figure it out and start winning stuff. I also think they will have more success when you look over the course of the first 6 months of 2026. And I'm willing to bet that Spirit will as well. You know, I think for me, Furia is like that top three, top four, top five team where they have to fight with Spirit themselves and Mouse to be that third best team in that category. And I'm not certain that that's going to be Furia winning out of that duel. It very much could be, but I honestly think that Spirit have way higher potential. You know, Donk factor is one thing. I think the whole changing in-game leader and giving them a fresh breath of air, that's going to be very interesting to follow, because I also do think that what kind of characterized Spirit in 25 was that they actually did show up at some of the bigger tournaments and won them. You know, winning Cologne is no biggie, right? And they did that after bringing in Shui. Then they won the Blast Bounty Season 2 as well here in Malta, following up by that. And they had a couple of big results, you know. I think the same is going to happen this time around, where I see it more unlikely that Furia will, you know, place third, fourth at a couple of tournaments and then suddenly win one. If Furia wants to win trophies, I feel like there has to come in a streak like we saw in the end of 2025. So I don't know. It's just a hunch, but I feel like I've seen it so many times where a team that on paper is doing so much better than we all expected them to do, it's very hard for them to manifest themselves and just, you know, make that the new baseline. I feel like we've seen it so many times with teams where they overachieve a little bit for a couple, sure, of months, 3 months, 4 months, and then they revert back to the level that we expect. Mongols, great example. They had a couple of months, you know, last year where you're like, ooh, are they going to be in contention to be, yeah, number one, number two, number three in the world? Well, they fall back to the base level that they've been at the past 2 years, right? And that's what normally happens. Same could be said for Furia. It's not even a negative thing to me, no, if Furia were the third best or the fourth best team in the world. I think that's still better than I would have anticipated just a, yes, year ago. So it's not a bad thing. It's just that's how it normally goes, you know. It all goes back to normal at some point. It's just a question of when. And I see that happening for Furia within the first 6 months.
No, here's why I'll also say it as well. I think you framed it well there. What people have to remember is what the expectations were when they made this roster move way back. Like, it was before one of the PGLs. I think it was after PGL, the first Bucharest. So it was maybe like
Astana or something.
Astana, maybe. Okay. Yep. So whichever one it was, if people remember, when they made that move, Like, look, a lot of people weren't like negative, but there was like, what a weird move. Like, wow, what a gamble. You know, will these moves, should they have brought Yekindar in? Who the fuck's Molodoy? How's this going to affect people like Yuri? What's Fallon going to? There were so many question marks. Like, if you would have told someone then, oh, by the way, boys, at the end of the year, you get to be number one ranked at one point in time. You win four trophies. Two of them are even like real estate trophies. And you get to be a favourite of the major. You'd already take the, you'd take the deal. Like, you notice at the end, I didn't say you win the major. You'd take that instantly. You'd snap the person's hand off, as you say in English. Surely the same thing applies now. Like, if, as I say, even if I take my angle, maybe they become the fourth best team and they win one trophy, that's still fucking good. They were going to be irrelevant when they had the Brazilian lineup, bro. They, at that point, they were having to do like ridiculous things of like, do we recruit NQZ or fucking Safe again? Like, it was ridiculous shit like that. That never even gave you a runway to be the number one team and win a major. Because I know what you mean. The real problem here is their fans, understandably, I'll be polite for once and say, are incredibly enthusiastic, let's just say, pimp. Their fans just believe they have to be number one because they sort of worship them. The problem is being number one right now is not realistic because of Vitality, because of what if Spirit works, what if Falcons get noticed. By the way, there's the other thing that fucks you if you're Furia. The real issue you have as well is you've almost plateaued how good your team can be. The one area I'll give a tiny little bit of wiggle room is, okay, Molodoy is still quite young in his career. Maybe he could get even better. That would be kind of cool. But as we just said, there's also a world where Yuri and Yekindar are less impactful. There's a world also, I'll just throw this out there, where, I mean, you notice, despite all that success, Fallen keeps messaging, bro, that he's thinking of retiring soon, or this is his last year, or it can't last that much. That sounds to me, mate, I'll tie it into what you said about the Sphinx Vitality. If you ever saw the Sphinx Vitality in season two, where behind the scenes we all knew they fucking hate this guy, he's definitely going to be out the team. It's just they couldn't get the deal done to replace him. So essentially, like real professional sportsmen, we just have to put our egos aside and play the game. It's not like he didn't play and they didn't try with him, mate. I can tell you, you watched him in tournaments, they were still really good. But the problem was, the second they hit a hard point or they sort of got punched in the mouth in the game, you knew that they would sort of fold a bit easier than if it was a real squad. Same thing with the Fallen Furia angle. The real problem if you're Furia is this. You better cook in this first season, because if you have a bad season, then maybe he does just retire and go, that was it, cool. I got the team into a good place again. Either I transition and become a coach or do something else, or we find someone else younger to be at. In which case, by the way, this project's over. Meanwhile, think of some of the other squads we're talking about, like Spirit and Falcons. They still have possibilities to get better, mate. That's the scariest thing, I think, if you look at these teams. So, all right, if you did the Falcons one already, I agree with you. And here's the problem, pimp. People who make fun of Falcons don't even listen to the logic of how they're making fun of them. You know, everyone makes fun of them with this thing like, one more superstar. That would be great banter if that wasn't really what their option was. Like, that would be a hilarious. Here's what that would be really funny, guys. That would be really funny to say to Team Liquid, because Team Liquid spent way too much on stars. The joke is Team Liquid can't afford to just sign another star, mate. They've done it, like, every season for the last 3 years or something. So, like, you can mock them by doing that. If you say it to Falcons, like, Falcons can actually do that. So I agree with you. Here's where people still haven't figured out, pimp, that they are Real Madrid, right? There are three options this season for Falcons. One, this roster just works. You just win tournaments already. In which case, we don't need to get to the other two. That's already possible. You've got the players to do it. It's just, can you ever get it together? Let's say option one fails. As you said, number two is the most obvious one. It's the one that, remember guys, they already told us they wanted Nico in 2023. It took them over a year to get him, but they did get him in the end. So in the same way, haven't they been signaling in all these off seasons, they want a Yimfar a bit. They want those two players to replace it, to make the six. So if option one, the current lineup fails, option two is, we just go and get that player anyway. By the way, those players are fully aware they want them. Then it just becomes, how much money really are we going to offer? And as Falcons have already proven, if they really want you, bro, they just keep adding zeros as the joke, and then eventually everyone says yes, because it just makes business sense. And then the last one, I'll even throw a third option out there. If it goes really bad for Falcons, the most obvious option they've also messaged for the last entire year is any moment that they want to, there's a big red box on the wall, pimp, that says break in case of emergency, Nico becomes IGL. That box is there the whole time. I even think, by the way, if you're Kicksan, that's also what's unfair. It's not just Tessess knows any minute now he's going to get kicked out of fucking the team for Yimfar or Bit, because basically Nico has bad tournaments or Keisuke is young. If you're Kicksan, you also know, I basically have to win the major. One day this guy next to me is going to take my spot, and then guess what? I'm out the team. So like, I don't really know how you fail if you're Falcons. Essentially, failing just activates the next fucking escape plan, you know what I mean? Like, eventually, surely they have to be good eventually. Like, in fact, I'd be more interested in that sense, but I'd be more interested to know how bad it could get. Because I feel like also they will pull these triggers pretty quick if it goes bad. Like, if they let's say they bombed the first, like, Krakow and some other, I feel like they'd make one of these moves immediately, mate. In fact, if anything, as much as people mock them for the one more superstar, the team does seem like they operate on, like, sunken cost fallacy. If we've already spent all this, why not get the extra player? Why not get the other guys? Well, it almost seems like the logic they've used so far.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like if any GM out there is not, you know, making a contingency plan or not preparing for the worst, then they're not doing the job. And especially for Falcons, that, you know, I think a lot of people expected them to make a change after the major, which was seen as another disappointment. I'm not sure it was. Obviously, the way they lost, I guess, in the quarterfinal was disappointing. The way they almost didn't even make the playoff as well and had to struggle so much in stage three was not cool, you know, to see. But they still decided to stick with this team. And all we heard so far from some of the players is that they want to stick with this team. They still believe they can win trophies. And in all fairness, you know, I think I saw in Hong Kong why that is. You know, when they lost to Furia in that grand final in Hong Kong, I think it was 3-1 for Furia. But I felt like every single map they played, they could have won. You know, it could have been theoretically a 4-0 series for Falcons. At least they felt that they had a chance on every single map. And that was when Furia were at their absolute best. So if you're Falcons and you're almost taking down the number one team in a grand final, and you've probably felt that you should have, you know, had it not been for some silly mistakes and some silly fuck-ups, then I understand why you still believe in your roster and you still believe in your squad. But as you also said, it only takes one or two tournaments for some of the upper management, you know, to be like, fuck it, we had enough, you know, because I agree with you. If you constantly have another, you know, layer that you can dive into, if you constantly have that, you know, opportunity of pressing the red button, you know, and make another record signing, you know, and getting in Bit or getting in Jim Fett or getting in whoever else, you know, I don't know if you can lure heavy guard out of G2, you know, which is just wishful.
Might not be impossible, sense, but I mean, I imagine his nationality might be a problem. But aside from that, I know what you mean.
Maybe that, yeah, you got. But that's the thing, right? So if you're Falcons at that point, I very much agree with what you just said, and I think that's where people fail to at least mention or acknowledge. Yes, they may not find success right now, but it's just a question of time. And again, it's all about setting the expectations. Because a year ago, people were like, "Oh, Falcons, they're never going to be a top five team."
Yeah.
And then they became a top five team, right? And they were winning a couple of tournaments. They got money. You think to yourself, "Okay, now it's time to win trophies." And yes, they didn't win trophies. And I remember back to the argument I made a couple of episodes ago. For some reason, we're living in a world and a day and age right now where if you don't win, it means nothing. Personally, I don't believe jack shit in that. I think coming second, you know, next to a team like Furia, or being in three grand finals or four grand finals and getting into semifinals consistently, that means something. That would be the same thing as saying that all those tournaments where Vitality only got second place or only got into the semifinal or lost the grand final, didn't mean shit, you know, because they didn't win. No, that's still why we built them up to maybe be the best team to ever grace Counter-Strike, because they got into all those finals. So clearly it means something. But when we speak Falcons, it means nothing. If you don't have the trophy, it means nothing. I don't buy into that, right? The expectation was that, okay, a year ago, not even a top five team. They're irrelevant. Okay, then they became relevant. Now we want them to win. So if they don't win, it doesn't even matter anymore. If Falcons can be a top three team and get close to winning trophies and still have the belief within the team and within some of the, I guess, personalities in the scene that they can still win, then I get why they're trying one more time with this roster. But I also think that the changes, as we just discussed, they're obvious. Whether that is getting rid of Tessus and making another big signing, you know, in that role, whether that is maybe pushing Niku into becoming the in-game leader and then actually relieving Tessus, putting him back into some of the roles that he played before, where I think Tessus did fantastically well. I think Falcons have different avenues they can explore if it doesn't go well for them. Where, let's take Na'Vi as an example. What happens if Na'Vi does bad at Krakow? What happens if FaZe does bad at Krakow? Who are they going to go out and sign that will immediately make them better? That's going to be incredible tough for them. First and foremost, because they probably don't have the money for it. Second of all, they don't have the same attraction power, right? If you are a prospering talent, if you're the next big thing, if you're the guy that everyone wants to join your team, and you have offers from Falcons, and you have an offer from FaZe, and you have an offer from G2, and you have an offer from Na'Vi, well, guess who you're picking at that point, right? Not only are you going with where you get a more, I guess, stable salary within Falcons, but you're also going to the team that you actually believe can win. And that's not FaZe right now. That's not Na'Vi right now. So what I really feel that people fail to maybe understand is that, yes, Falcons, they may fail Maybe they don't win, but at least they have another shot. They have another avenue they can go to. They have a third avenue they can go to. They have this direction, that direction. I feel like for teams like Na'Vi and FaZe and maybe even G2 as well, if whatever roster they have right now doesn't work out, they're kind of left scratching their head right now thinking, what the fuck do we do then? We don't have the money to splash on a new player. And I'm not even sure the players that we want to join our team anymore because it's been quite lackluster as of late, et cetera, et cetera. So I think if you're Falcons, you're in a really good position to find success eventually. It's just a question of time, how long it's going to take and how frustrated we're going to be in the process. I agree with you, by the way. I want to see it get real bad before it gets real good. Yeah. I almost want them to fail at Krakow so they do some sort of like big red panic move, you know, and sign Bit or sign fucking Jim Fett for Mouse or whatever that may be. And then we see the real super team, because I know we describe them as a super team right now, but in its core, is Kixon a super? Is he like the super in-game leader you want to have on a super team? Not necessarily. I think he's great, you know, to be completely honest, but I don't think he's a superstar in that regard. Is Tessis a superstar in the role that he's in right now? Not really. So you have three key pieces. You have three superstars, but there's space for one more if you want.
And to be fair, no one really knew if Kiyosuke would actually make it. We started to see it before it happened. So I agree with you. I actually think super team's one of those misused labels because people just do it in hindsight when the team's really good. It was super team's supposed to be when you form the team. Oh, the name's crazy. It's why you can have squads where actually, on paper, they won't actually live up to what their names are. Sometimes the names look bonkers, but the actual roster's not that sick. No, another thing as well, by the way, I actually also think a real reason why Spirit has been so motivated the last year to GM their squad in this particular way, where they're simultaneously making big moves, but like I say, not like painting themselves into a corner. They always keep that player and then they have the option of bringing back depending on what happens. I think a lot of that, by the way, I don't even think that's just pure good GMing. I think they're also doing it, Pimp, because they want to keep Donk happy. I think in that team, if you're smart, you know that Bro, the one player that if he leaves this team, we go from being like, can win everything to, are we just a top 10 team? Is Donk. And the most obvious direct destination he would go to is Falcons, Bro. Because remember, I'll tell you a quick story. I think he said it in an interview once, but Carlos Ocelot, the owner of G2 back in the day, still like a privately in owner now, but he just doesn't do anything publicly. He's not trolling. Before he got Monacy, the reason he got Monacy is quite literally he did go, and he wasn't trolling. He inquired with Na'Vi and Vitality, can I buy Simplor's Ewu? And look, obviously initially they're like, lol, shut the fuck up, get out. And he's like, no, I mean for real. Let's imagine, think of this as a sports deal. What amount would you want for me to get that player? Like, let me see if I can make it work. Like, because if you don't know how those deals work in esports, guys, what tends to happen is, because you're going to have to spend millions and millions, you do it like you do any business investment. What you do is you go to your sponsors and investors and say, right, I'm going to need this many more millions, but it's a business proposal. I can get, in this case, slam dunk players, like the best players of each of the past few years, likely to be the next few years going to be the best. Basically, the most obvious move you could do. I mean, it's the example. Funny that NIP used it with Device, because that wasn't really the best analogy, but it is true. If you ever get a chance to sign, like, still prime Cristiano Ronaldo, you have to do it, mate. You'd be a moron not to. Like, you'll spend the rest of your life regretting not trying to do that move, because that might have been the most, even if it was a bazillion dollars, it might be the move that makes your team amazing. So, similarly, right, every other team basically has it in their brain. You can't get Zebu. You probably can't get Donk. I mean, that's why if you notice, Spirit themselves joke all the time that it's like 10 million. It isn't, by the way. That's why on Twitter, I said, I think it'd be like 5 million, mate. As in, it's one thing to say, would you do it for 5 million? That's an interview question. I mean, if you actually sent them a thing and said, look, I can tomorrow escrow you fucking 5 million US dollars, I think they might do it, no matter what people say. But the point is, right now you don't do it because you're number one, you can win everything. But if you are Donk yourself, if you ever stop believing in this project and then you know Falcons not only want you, but essentially would pay any amount of money, that move can happen. And as I said on Twitter, that's the move I think about every single year since last year when the top three, just like they are now, because I know Rops is like number three on HLTVs, but that's because he's in Vitality, Bro. Number three probably is Monacy again, right? So if we look at those three players, the most obvious thing screaming out to me, Pimp, as someone who watched CSGO like you and used to watch Kenny S and Shox never play together, and then they'd be losing to NIP and Fnatic, and I would just be sat there like, boys, there's an obvious fucking solution here. See the other guy at the end of the bar. And I've even, by the way, that even happened before they made the super team. The moment I knew they would make the super team of Kenny S and Shox was one time in a bar at like a post game event. I finally saw them like talking to each other at the bar, and I was like, finally, that's what I've been waiting like 4 years to happen. So I just want to know, Pimp, because it's going to happen one day. When do Monacy and Donk just turn to each other when they're on that stage with fucking Zebu and just go, why don't we just fucking team up and wreck this motherfucker? Like, listen, Chiro's cool and everything, mate, but come on, come on. Because Because Nikon Monacy sounds dope until you think of fucking Donkin Monacy. There'll be box office TV for everyone. And then, look, it's probably not going to happen this year, but down the line, that's one of those moves. Like I say, it feels like one day it has to happen. It feels like there's a magnetic force pulling these two players. That's just both Russian, if people don't realise it. They can even both play in spirit one day. If you want to go the other way, I doubt that's going to be the case because we're assuming it's Falcons in the back. But that's another, if you're spirit, because let's talk about spirit now, that is another factor. You're not just trying to GM to be a great team and to win the game and do great business. You also have to keep this fucking giga prodigy happy, because one thing I do think about, by the way, when I look at Vitality and all the options they have, and now, like as you say, they should probably be number one team again, is the best thing they ever did in their whole time as an org is not just find Zeewoo, it's keep Zeewoo, mate. Somehow there's never even been a rumor he leaves. That is huge, because mate, Monacy did leave G2. He did leave Na'Vi. Other players have moved. Almost everyone. The joke is even simpler than bullying Na'Vi now. So if you are Spirit, your number one goal, every goal has to somehow feed into the ultimate objective of we must keep Donk for as long as possible. Ideally forever. Ideally he never leaves. So I think that's why I want to get your take now. I notice a lot of people haven't been bold with this one, Pimp. A lot of people were excited by these roster moves, cutting Chopper, taking out Zwei, bringing back Zontix and bringing back Magix and changing the roles up a little bit. But I want to know, similar to the Fiora, what is, where are the stocks going to be at for this team? Like, do you think they go up? Can they become number one? Do they win tournaments? Where, what's the expectations for this squad for you, Pip? Are you excited by the Spirit roster?
I'm excited by them. I'm very excited by them. But it depends on what you mean by being number one. Because they're never going to, in my opinion, right, from what I've seen and what I think about Magix being an in-game leader and that team and the way they work and just the personalities in terms of the mood swings within the team and both Shiro and Donk, they're going to be a team that if everything clicks, they can be number one by the fact that they will win more tournaments than anyone else, you know. But they're not going to, I don't think they're going to dominate the way Vitality did. I don't think we have a team, you know, that has the potential to become this staple number one, you know, who's going to win five out of seven tournaments or five out of eight tournaments. I think more likely they'll be like they were in 24 and in 25, where they will probably, you know, show up to a major and be one of the favorites to win it. And maybe they win a major. They showed up to Cologne last year and they won Cologne, which way, by the way, on the lineup, right? Oh. And they will always have that ability to come into any given tournament and win it. They're almost like, to me, they're like prime G2 with Hooksy, Nico, and Modesty, right, where they were never considered the best team in the world, but they would come into every tournament and everyone knew that if everything clicked, well, they could win it. Yes. But they also knew that if everything didn't click, they would be in above 5-8 or whatever. You know, they'd go out in a quarterfinal or make the semifinal and then bow out. I feel like that's the same thing I expect coming out of Spirit. And it's just reinforced by the fact that, yes, the G2 lineup in 23 and 24 with Hooksy and Monacy and Nico, that was interesting for different reasons, but they had like sort of like the same star power where sometimes Monacy and Nico would just take over the server and they would just win games they weren't supposed to win. Or they would beat teams where they wouldn't be the better team, right? They just had the better individuals, right? So they had the better players and by then they would win games. The same thing is going to happen with Spirit. The same thing is going to happen when Donk is on the server. So they can show up in a semifinal and they can be theoretically outplayed as a team, but they're still going to win because Donk is going to win a 1v4, he's going to win a 1v5, and he's going to win a couple of clutches that they weren't supposed to win. So I feel like that's where my expectations are at, that it's going to be a more potent Spirit than we saw in 24. It's going to be a more potent in the sense that I think there is a higher likelihood that they can string together a couple of tournaments, or maybe, you know, not go, was it 5 or 6 tournaments at the end of 25 where they finished 5th to 8th and a couple of tournaments where they didn't even make the playoff. I feel like for me, bare minimum is that Spirit make the playoff every single time by now and then they win a little more than they did last year based on Donk. But do I believe that it's going to be a team that is going to build a new dynasty, that's Magic's going to come out and be, you know, a great in-game leader and going to contest, you know, to be in the conversation as who is the most informed in-game leader right now? No, I don't think there's anything that points in that direction, but I would have said the same thing about Apex when he sprung out as an in-game leader, you know, changing from being an entry fragger. So it's impossible. It's almost impossible to predict someone to be world beaters, but I do predict and I do sense that Spirit will be a little bit more stable. I would be disappointed if they do another run of tournaments like we saw last year where they went 5th to 8th, didn't even make the playoff, 5th to 8th again, and then they went into a grand final. It'll be more like they're going into a grand final, they're winning a tournament, they exit a semifinal, they go back to a grand final, they exit a quarterfinal, they go into a semifinal. So a little bit more stable without being like a force you can fully comply with or a force that you can always count on. And the variable is always going to be, is Donk going to have a world-class tournament or is he just going to be the best player in the world? Like there's a difference in those two regards.
No, I have to say, obviously I'm still hyped about Vitality after the way they won the major, but after Vitality, it is Spirit I'm the most hyped for. Like, it's not even just the whole Donk factor, although that is one, which is he does do the thing that I've seen from literally two or three players ever, which is they just never do seem to play a bad mate. Whether they win or not seems to be activated by the squad. And I have to say, when I look at the squad they've built around him, it's also one of the reasons why, even though in theory, on paper, it's a massive gamble, I don't think it is as much of a gamble, though, because it's not just that we're bringing people to do different roles. They've all been in the team before, though. That is different to me. That at least gives you a chance that it can just work immediately, whereas it's much more of a gamble if it's new players coming in to do these roles. So, because one thing I have to say, it does trigger me, Pimp. It's very rare that I let them get to me now. If you notice, because especially I don't read as many social media replies, I'm a little bit more like I was 10 years ago. I'm more just more of a rascal where I'm just poking fun at people and I make the odd comment, but I'm not really like, there's not really as much vitriol behind it. But one thing that does get to me a little bit is that dog shit fucking take from Zemu fans, which goes like this. Right, remember, I'll just remind everyone a little history lesson here. If you go back to the beginning of Zewu's career, when he was playing with loads of like legendary role players like NBK, RPK, fucking Apex himself, Alex was a pretty good IGL. He had some pretty god pieces. The problem he had, obviously, classically was they weren't big fraggers, though. So if you looked only at that HLTV rating, like that famous box score, you remember it like Cologne, where it was like Zewu was like, you know, 1.3 rating and then everyone else was like a 1.00 rating. That looks shit, because it looks like he doesn't have any help. And I used to go, whoa, 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 whoa. He doesn't have a lot of firepower help, but he has loads of help in his team, though. Like, those pieces work around him awesome. In fact, remember a famous controversial interview the first year of Zemu's career was by Alex, the in-game leader, where he essentially said something, the gist of it was, like, everyone goes on and on about Zemu, but they don't see that we're just flashing him in all the time. The joke is, Zemu fans themselves now do that to Donk. You'll have seen it, Pimp. They make it sound like the whole team exists just to, like, throw a flash for Donk, run in for Donk, give Donk a gun, let Donk pay him. And I just watch the games and I'm like, what are we talking about? Like, there's a bit of that. Like, by the way, I made my point myself at the beginning of 2024 when the one kind of eats it. Oh, don't say it's Donk on his own. The team clearly does run players for him and they do, like, clearly have a setup that helps his start. But my problem is, I feel like these fans almost make it sound like the team's doing half a Donk shit. Like, boys, I predict right now, no chopper, he's gone completely. I predict Donk will frag just the same. I don't think he won't lose a step. But I am interested to see how the squad will work around him, because essentially your main job, just like the job of Spirit the Org, is keep Donk in the team and happy. The job of the other players is get the fuck out of Donk's way and let him do all of his shit and then just fill in the holes around him. Because one of the things about their team of why when they had the past roster, I used to be one of the people, by the way, when they had Chopper and Magics, who used to say, I don't care if they win tournaments because they have Donk. I think they should make a roster move. Like, this can't work forever. I don't think he can be the consistent number one because the floor of some of the players is just too low. One of the problems I remember back then was I'm not one of these people who goes that hard at Shiro. He clearly has a mild choking problem in big finals, but in all the other matches he's really good and there's not that many good AWPers, so you have to make, I don't expect more from him. I think I've seen everything I can see. So what excites me about this roster, mate, is imagining all the rest. Like, I can see more from today. I saw it already in Heroic. I've seen glimpses at the end of the major there. If I get more out of him immediately with how good Donk is, we're winning tournaments, boys, again. We're right back in final. So then it just becomes, if you're Magickers and Zontics, I don't even need you technically to be the Magickers and Zontics the last time you're in Spirit. Just be better than whatever Chopper was in Zwei and just do a slightly better job. And again, just let Donk carry the game. Let Tenere carry the game. If these guys do it, that's why I'm excited, because I know what you mean, Pim. If I look at this squad, even on the best case scenario, it shouldn't be number one. It shouldn't win like all the time. But I could imagine this too. If, as we say, essentially just makes a stronger team around Donk, you could have some really insane one-off tournaments, though, bro. You just blow everyone out the water. You just win every game 2-0. That could happen. I low-key do think they should be the number two team of the season. I have them primed to win a lot of events, potentially. I'm excited.
I think then, yeah, you should be. You should be. I think they're in that conversation. And I also do think that, at least in, as I said before, like I have Vitality, I have Falcons, and I have Spirit being the three teams I think are going to do the most interesting results, let's put it that way, you know, the first 6 months of 2026. But there's also the caveat that we don't know the potential of Tenere. I feel like whenever you watch Tenere play, I feel like it's so clear that he has a super sharp aim, you know. Yep. Obviously, prime Tenere in Heroic, he did stuff that he wasn't supposed to do, and he kind of elevated a team that wasn't really built around him, first and foremost, but also he did stuff on his own where he could almost dictate the game by himself. And I'll get back to that because you hit a soft spot of mine just before. But Tenere is like the unproven talent, I guess, within Spirit, that if he finds his footing, if there's a way where Mackies comes into the team, in-game leads in a way where Sontex, he's just going to do his stuff. Like, he's a low maintenance kind of guy. He doesn't need a lot of help. He doesn't need a lot of resources. Just let him do whatever as a role player, sort of like Messi is for Vitality. If anything, he makes the team around him better. If Mackies can then, again, you know, allow Dunk to just do whatever the hell Dunk does, and Dunk is not going to miss a step, as you said, I don't think he's going to be worse off as a fracker having Matic as an in-game leader compared to Chopper. Honestly, I don't think he cares. You know, he could play Face It, he can play in Spirit, he can play in a mixed team, he can join any team tomorrow, he can join Face, team up with Kerrigan, Dunk would be the exact same player, find the exact same impact, which is one of the most undervalued, I guess, fucking attributes any player can have out there. You know, take Elise as an example, the greatest NA player out there. He relies on teams around him to be built around him, to understand what's going on. Otherwise, he's not as good as he truly is. Dunk doesn't care about that. Like, he surpasses that completely. But for me, if you're Mackies, most of the focus should be on Tenier. Because if you can make him not even a secondary star, right? Because you have Shiro, as you said, but if you can make him the third rifle of that team, if you can make him the Kiyosuke sort of Spirit, performing at the same level where Kiyosuke and Nico and Monesi having that trio, you have Dunk, Shiro, and then a Tenier playing at a high level, I think that could be an equal strong trio compared to the other three, right? Where Monesi, Nico, and Kiyosuke, obviously, per name value right now, is the strongest trio the game can offer. So I think that's where it gets super interesting for me. If Tenier can get activated, then Spirit goes on from being a team that I expect, as I said before, to win a couple of tournaments, to show up, you know, maybe win a major, maybe win a Krakow, maybe win a Cologne, but then occasionally get into a final, occasionally win a tournament. But if Tenier is activated fully and Dunk is continuing to do Dunk stuff, then maybe there's a world where they win, instead of winning two or three trophies, maybe they win 5, 6, 7 throughout the year, right? That's the potential, I feel, for Spirit, so I buy into that. Another one I just want to say right there, and just because you struck a nerve of mine, I hate that when we, historically speaking, players and impact, and as you said, like you said, the golden word, Saiwoo fans are kind of doing the same thing that they felt people were doing to Saiwoo back in the day in Vitality. You don't watch the fucking game if you think that's the case. Like, Dunk is, as I said before, like, he's the one player in the world who dictates the game by whatever fucking mood he's showing up in, right? He's going to do whatever he wants to, and he's going to do it by himself, and he needs such little help to do so. There's only so many times you can flash for Dunk, because he's so aggressive in the way that he's entering, in the way that he's taking space, that more often than not, having a guy come with you and setting up a flash and whatever, that's going to ruin Dunk's timing. Now, he has a feeling for when he's going for the aim duel, so if he wants a guy to flash for him, or if he wants a guy to be the second, like, he all of a sudden becomes dependent on another guy, and when you watch Dunk play on the server, you can almost sense sometimes that he'll be like, oh, please go away. Let me just do it by myself here. Whereas other players down in history, I don't know, Cold Sera, great example, you know, obviously in his prime, a fantastic rifler, but was he a guy that truly dictated the game from round one by himself, or did he rely a bit on Fur to do the entering, to create the space, and then he would come in clutch, right? That's where he kind of stepped up and was the best in his role. Dunk does it before that. Dunk does the hardest role the game has to offer. He does it consistently, and he does it more often by not by himself. I'm not saying the team around him is not trying. I'm not saying they're not, you know, setting up for him or allowing him or giving him the freedom or occasionally flashing for him. But it's not like an Astralis kind of way where Dupree was always set up by flashes, you know, in his entry fracking path. I feel like Dunk is more like a raw face-it player whenever he plays for Team Spirit. And that is remarkable. Like, no players can do that right now. One thing is us saying it. One thing is the fans discussing it. One thing is you know, trying to put it into a historical context. But when you speak to every single current pro player, every single one highlights Dunk, and they're like, fuck, man, then off. He shouldn't be able to do what he's doing right now. Like, he's playing the hardest role in the game. He's entry-fragging, and I'm trying to, like, why can't I do that? You know, it almost seems unfathomable for them to put themselves in his position and find that kind of impact. And we're talking about the best players in the world. We're talking about, you know, individuals that out of 10 million Counter-Strike players, they're maybe number 10, number 15, number 20, and they don't believe how much better Dunk is at what he does in the same role. And I think that's what people need to fucking understand, that there's levels to this game, right? There's levels to how you play Counter-Strike, which is also why, yeah, the whole conversation about who was the best player of 2025, to me, it's like, yeah, we don't have to get into that, but there's no doubt that Dunk just had the best individual season any Counter-Strike player has ever had. So if that's not making him the best player in the world, then nothing will ever do. You know, it doesn't matter at that point.
No, by the way, that would even be how I would even start a more interesting discussion, if people ever want to have it, about Dunk versus EU last year. Is bro, am I missing something? Don't we all agree this is EU's best team ever, where it looks like he has almost the perfect pieces around him? Hence why the bigger discussion isn't even Dolph versus Emu. It's like Vitality versus the best team to ever play Counter-Strike. Like, that's a... No one's having that conversation about fucking Team Spirit, any version of the squad. Like, that's not even entering someone's thoughts. Also, similarly, as you say, by the way, first of all, the real reason why the Flash thing is just nonsense. It's not even true. They don't even have vaguely the best Flash stats. You know, those stats guys are all on HLTV.org. Go to that FTU page. Everyone, all the analysts use that page religiously. Actually, Spirit has some kind of whack fucking stats on some of those maps, mate. Like, there's some maps where they're not even flashing in as much as people make out. You know, as you say, there's classically, there are teams that are amazing at that. And then lastly, you nailed it there, using sort of almost like the replacement theory. This is the dumbest part about that theory. Is, bro, if it was the case that he's just a really talented player that the whole team set up for, then as you say, the model would be there. If I also have a really skilled entry rifler, I should just run my team like that and we'll win, right? So I'll tell you what, if we're Mouse and we've got Exertion, boys, I think we know what to do here. If we're fucking, we've got Yekindar and Furia, hey, that's good itself. The point is, I can tell you, not only would those teams never attempt that because it wouldn't work, but actually, I have literally done interviews with people like Exertion where they will openly tell you, Pimp, I actually watch Donk games myself because I have no fucking clue how he does that, even though yes, he plays my role and I don't even imagine I can be better than him. Like, normally, remember, poor players are, at least privately, they're pretty cocky people, bro. Like, there'll be some more prop there you guys don't even know thinks he, like, you know what, I don't know this guy, but I'll just take a guess. You know, the Grix guy has a vibe that people think he's toxic, or Wrinkle. I'll bet some of these guys do secretly think they're better than Modesty, mate, and they're just like, well, you know, if I was in his spot, or if I had Deco, you know, they all, no, but I can tell you, even privately, no aggressive rifle thinks that about Donk. In fact, the joke is they all watch his demos and they're fanboys of him, even though he's like way younger than them, way less experienced, so they should be the veterans. So no, that's the other thing that people don't seem to realise. If it was a blueprint that worked, someone would copy it. Like, I can tell you, if you want to think of other historical examples, I always said this in Na'Vi, if people don't know. The reason why in Na'Vi it was genius that, like, Zeus eventually got simple is, Zeus's whole career was building teams around Star Warpers. He used to have Marklov in 1.6, then he had Guardian in CSGO, and then he got simple. So if there was a blueprint already set up that when you come into his team, you know who the star's going to be, you know how they're going to be set up, and they've already got it for... I don't even still know... By the way, this is also why I think this Spirit roster will be amazing. I don't even think it is what people are implying. Like, it had to be those exact players. I think we will soon learn Donk can play, I agree with you, with anyone. I think he's actually one of the players you could drop, like you say, into any team, and he would be 95% as good. Listen, I'll still give a little aspect. I think people like Halley probably are important for how he's seen him in the game. He probably does. One of the reasons I like some of these players coming back is I do get the vibe, actually. This will sound like a fucked up example, but I think for Donk, Magic's is sort of like a Smiths for Shocks thing of like, he just likes playing with him, mate. And when you're as good as some of these guys are, I know we all want to be like, just get over it, mate. Just be his mate. Nah, but if you're as good as they are, if that's what it takes to make it fucking work for you, mate, let's see if we can make it. Let's facilitate you in this analogy, you know, let's see if it can happen for you. Because I don't hate it on that angle, but I know what you mean. I think it's so wild that people actually like I say, it's so bad that Zemu fans do it. Because, guys, that's what people were doing to you. That's what you wanted people to acknowledge that Zemu was the super carry back then, and they didn't have a lot of help. I think we all were quite fair back then. That's why we all said he could be number one player of the year, even though, by the way, he did fuck all those majors that year. We just didn't notice how that's the angle for 2025. Yeah, but he did majors. Like, how dare you say that as a Zemu fan? What, the guy hadn't won a fucking playoff series till, like, 2024 or something, you fuck. 2023, whatever. But fuck you. How dare you? How dare you, sir?
Yeah. It's also the way that it kind of like redefining the way that we think of Counter-Strike in a sense. So when you think of Vitality, obviously last year, best team of the year, no doubt. Like, we all praise them for having like the perfect setup of players. They all have players in their roles that makes an awful lot of sense. Flames.
Well, you probably saw it, Pim, role player. At the end of the year when HLTV did that thing of all the best roles. It was everyone in Vitality, except instead of Flames, it was Donk. The whole squad, bro, it was like Anchor, Rolurker, Rifler, Star. Like, coach, it was just the whole of Vitality, but with Donk instead. And the joke is, surely that'd be the only way you could upgrade Vitality. You just put Donk instead of fucking Flames, wouldn't you? Like,
yeah, exactly. And that's been the approach to Counter-Strike for quite some time, you know, true. That you need the perfect synergy in between the roles, in between the players. Look at 2024, Team of the Year, Na'Vi. Look at the fucking player material they had to work with. And tell me that they were supposed to be the best team of 2024. Yes. Probably still a debate whether or not that was Spirit or Na'Vi. But the point I'm trying to make is a lot of teams right now, a lot of GMs as well, are having the approach that we need synergy. We need the perfect player and the perfect role. We need this guy to like this guy and this guy to like this guy. And if there's not synergy, we can't win. Donk surpasses that. Like he's in a sense, I agree with you. The GMing that you see from Spirit right now is probably an equal tough job, but it's all about making sure Donk is happy about whoever the fuck he's playing with. It's not about making sure that whoever, like, don't tell me they signed Sway because they thought that he would come in and have like a synergetic effect, you know, that sure. He would be like, he's the perfect match to sure. make Chopper feel comfortable and Donk is going to feel comfortable around him. You signed Tenere, a hardcore raw aimer. You sign him based on the firepower. You don't sign him because you believe that his synergetic effect is yes. going to make Donk better, or he's going to be a soldier for Chopper, he's going to jump as high as he possibly can whenever Harley tells him to. Like, that's not how they work, that's not how they think Counter-Strike. They're trying to show us and try to show the world that yes, obviously what Vitality is doing is admirable, that's one way to win, but we have Donk and we have a different approach. So I love that whole, you know, contrast between two different philosophies, two different ways of thinking Counter-Strike, and then you have this perfect match between, you have Donk on one side, you have Shiro on the other. You know, stylistically speaking, you think to yourself, whoa, how could they get along on a Counter-Strike server? But they complement each other so well, and that's what I love about Spirit. That's why I'm excited about them. They're trying to change what we think is the formula for creating the best team in the world right now. We saw Heroic back in the days, you know, having the perfect synergy, the perfect team play, the proactiveness. We saw a year where Na'Vi with player material that, let's be honest, you look at the players and rate them individually how strong they are, maybe they should be a top 5 team. There's no way in hell they should be not top 1, which is why it was so impressive. And now you see Vitality, who obviously took it to the next degree, where they have the perfect synergy, they have the perfect roles, they have the perfect players in all the positions, but they're kind of trying to really make a monster out of that, and they're trying to combine the best of two worlds. And then you have the likes of Spirit, where they're like trying to brute force their way into it with the individual stars like Donk, like Shiro. You have Falcons, the Real Madrid, who's like one more star, one more individual. And I love that we can have a conversation at the very least, that there's not only one way of doing it. It would be fucking boring if all top 10 teams were like, no, we need the perfect synergy, we need the perfect role player. Like Astralis back in the day, you remember when they signed Borup into the lineup and everyone was like, yeah, but he's the perfect support player, he makes all of us better, that's the guy we want. And then Astralis went from being, I don't know, number 9 in the world to number 7, number 6. They got into the semifinal at Cologne and they were like, yeah, look at that, we signed Borup and he's the guy enabling all of us. And then they went to absolute shit because guess what, he's not good enough, right? Sure. There's a litmus test to how bad you could be as an individual player. So my point is that I love the fact that we have different philosophies and we have different teams doing it in different ways, and there's not one right way of doing it, right? There's space for the fucking old school envious and Fnatic who are just running around and playing deathmatch in official games and winning majors by doing so. You have a hybrid of Falcons who are trying to do a bit of both right now with Team Spirit, and then you still have the Vitality, you still have the Na'Vi, you still have the, I'd even say Mouse is another great example, where synergy is the name of the game, where all the pieces have to fit in perfectly in order to get the maximum outcome out of it. So it's great that we have teams that are trying to, I guess, test the grounds and not making sure that all teams are trying to build after the same formula, because that would be super boring if that was the case.
By the way, on what you said earlier about Tenere, I also agree. Like, one of the things I think's funny is I can always tell which fans really do just go on HLTV rating. Like, that's what, essentially, they think the higher the rating, the better the player you are, which, look, is a very, very loose connection, sure. But I do think the eye test reveals things that rating never can. Because even though they're completely different styles of player, bro, when I watch Tenere's aim, it's why I notice all the analysts agree. Like, there's no analyst who thinks he's just trash. Like, we all have a similar take. It's like, I don't know what they need to do to, like, figure out his role or switch him up, but clearly they haven't gotten enough out of him yet, because whenever you just watch his actual crosshair, bro, he reminds me back in the day of when the same thing used to be leveled at our good pal Config. What would happen was Config had years where in some of his down years, he'd be like a 1.05 rating player. Like, not a particularly, like, those are numbers that could be like a bad player on your team. But if you ever watched the demo, you'd go, his name is still crazy though, bro. Like, if this guy either psychologically could get it together, or does he need to be in a different role? Or is he, like, for example, there were team times in Config's career where I would even message him myself and be like, bro, why do you go first sometimes? Why don't you sort of like bait him and play the playmaker role? And then sometimes he would even tell me like, oh, actually, yeah, no one else has noticed that, but at the moment I don't feel very confident and I feel like I have to earn my way back. So my point is, you can just see from Tenere's crosshair alone, bro, like, when he actually hits shots, like, this guy could be like a top 10 player, mate. He's a really talented player. Like, I don't know yet if it'll work out, no one knows. There's also that whole factor, you get this in sports as well, maybe he's just going to be a guy who has to be a star at a lower level, and that's how he'll, maybe he has to be a Zantarez or a fucking Elise in that sense, to be on a lower team and be the man and have everything set. Who knows yet? But that's why I'm excited for the potential, because if you just see like what he is capable capable of. If they can ever make that work, that's why I said Shiro doesn't even have to get better, mate. If they ever get Tenere activated, you are just going to rack trophies up. Because that's the other thing about Donk that makes it unfair. And what really shows that Donk breaks the game is, we've just discussed how basically no version of the team he's played on so far has been close to a perfect team, but you still win trophies, mate. It can only go a few months not winning a trophy, it feels like. That's why this player is the most game-breaking player I've ever seen. Like, it feels like if you're Spirit, you don't even have to do the best GMing job. Just do a good enough GMing job. That's it.
Keep him happy. Keep him happy, and the trophies are going to come in.